Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Oceanic Iron Ore Corporation conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. At this time, your line will briefly be accessed from the conference. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Wednesday, September 19th, 2012. I would now like to turn the conference over to Stephen Roberts, VP Investor Relations for Oceanic Iron Ore Corporation. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Welcome, everybody, to the call to discuss Oceanic's pre-feasibility study. Just to remind you that the contents may include forward-looking statements, and for information, please refer to the disclaimer in our press release from today. In the room, we have Stephen Dean, CEO, Alan Gorman, COO, Irfan Sharif, our CFO. And myself, and I would like to turn it over to Stephen Dean.
Thank you, Stephen. Welcome, everybody. It is with pleasure that we are here to talk today about the press release that went out this morning, which presented the results of the pre-feasibility study for our Hope's Advance project in northern Quebec. It is with personal pleasure that I can and refer to the relatively fast track, the rapid track of progress of our project at Hope's Advance. The company acquired the project in late 2010. We started work on this project at a stage where we had no compliant 43-101 resources and reserves, only historical work, and I'm pleased to say that we now not only have established an increasing level of proven and probable and measured and indicated resources, we've also completed about a year ago a PEA, and we are now pleased to report on the results of the pre-feasibility study. Even though we are relatively later to the space than some of our peers, we are now the first of our peers, I believe, in the Labrador Trough in Quebec to get to the feasibility stage of engineering and study. The principal outcome, in my view, of the study is that it establishes the project as a very low cost producer in the low quartile globally, we believe, of operating cost FOB projects in the iron ore space. The principal reason for us being able to establish that position includes essentially three reasons. One is that we are located on the coast, which means that we don't have to transport our product from the mine site to a port, so that reduces typically and eliminates, I should say, rail costs, which many of our peers need to incur. Secondly, we are fortunate by virtue of the way the deposits are laid down that we enjoy a relatively low strip ratio in our mining costs. Just over 1.1 on our life of mine, and for the first 15 years of our project as configured, the strip ratio will be approximately 0.5 waste to ore. The third reason is that we also enjoy very simple metallurgy. The operating costs, processing costs, are comparable to some of the lowest costs of our operating peers in the Labrador Trough for those metallurgical reasons. The other point that I think distinguishes our project from our peers is that we are not reliant at all on third-party infrastructure. We are largely in control of the key infrastructure pieces, and in our case that's power and port. We're largely in control of the timeline towards construction and establishment of those key infrastructure components. So not only are we not reliant on third parties, but we're also not reliant as far as we have presented this project in terms of costs, CapEx and operating costs. We're not reliant on government support in any way, and we're not reliant on the timelines that government entities might have to comply with in terms of the provision of infrastructure. So the combination of that low-cost production base, the combination of our being in control of our timeline, particularly towards construction of infrastructure, I believe makes us the premier project in the Labrador Trough and potentially globally. What we would like to do is hand over the call to Alan Gorman, our Chief Operating Officer, and Alan will go into a little bit more detail in relation to some of the operating and capital components of the project and the study that we presented this morning in the press release. And then we'll open the call to any questions of any of the callers on the line. Alan?
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. I'd like to start out pointing out for those listening that our project, the Hope's Advanced Bay project, is defined by two attributes that are constant, regardless of iron ore prices, regardless of variation in shipping costs. The two fundamental attributes associated with Hope's Advanced Bay are we have an exceptional asset and low operating costs. And as listeners would know, historically, those two attributes have proven to hold mining companies in good stead through the cycles of demand and supply that have resulted in variations up and down in terms of commodity prices and in terms of transportation costs. So, participating in our pre-feasibility study in association with Oceanic Iron Ore, the participating consultants were Micron International, who handled the economic evaluation, the geology and the mining, Metchem, located in Quebec, processing, site infrastructure, and G&A components. Golder Associates handled the geotechnical considerations and the tailings and waste rock stockpile. AMAC, of course, has done the port design and studies for us in September of 2011. The pre-feasibility study delivers positive economic results. We have assumed in the study a price for iron of $100. All amounts have been recorded in U.S. dollars with a one-to-one exchange rate. And the base case, pre-tax net present value of $5.6 billion and an unlevered internal rate of return of 20.5% and a levered internal rate of return, assuming 60% debt financing, of 23.2% for 66.5% iron concentrate, we believe is an exceptional result. Our life of mine operating costs are going to approximate $30 per ton, and you will have read that our approach is to commence production with 10 million tons of concentrate per annum and self-generated power so that, as Stephen outlined clearly at the start, we are in control of schedule and schedule risks and fully independent in respect of infrastructure. We anticipate that construction will start in the summer of 2014, will be completed in 2016, and we'll be delivering concentrate into the market in 2017. Following that, our discussions with Hydro-Quebec have indicated that it would be reasonable to anticipate a grid power connection in 2025, at which time we would connect to the grid, realize some reduction in operating cost, approximately 10% in total per ton, and then would expand the operations funded with operating cash flows from 10 million tons per year to 20 million tons. The life of mine on that basis and the current reserves is 31 years. Capital costs initially will approximate $2.9 billion, including $0.93 billion of indirect costs, and the expansion would require from operating cash flows $1.6 billion in 2025-26, which also includes $0.5 billion of indirect and contingencies. The pilot plant work which we had undertaken, and I might point out, particularly early in the life cycle of the development of the feasibility of a mining operation, we've undertaken it at the pre-feasibility stage instead of the feasibility stage, has confirmed the high quality and metallurgical properties associated with Hope's advanced iron ore. There are virtually no deleterious elements. We can produce a high weight, high iron recovery product using a simple flow sheet. I'd like to point out, in respect of processing, and this is an area where our pilot plant commitment on the front end has delivered some favorable results. It's resulted in a very simple flow sheet comprised of a gravity circuit where most of the iron units are recovered, including 50% of the magnetite, and then further grinding in order to recover the remaining magnetite units. So approximately only 13% then of the material is subjected to the additional grind requirement, which requires some more intense power requirement, whereas the front part of the circuit, we've seen some grinding and power savings. So as a consequence, in total, in terms of the process flow sheet, we have seen simplification, and we've seen a lower cost on that part of the process. The increases associated with the pre-feasibility study are largely accounted for in respect of the power costs. Our preliminary economic assessment for Hope's Advanced Bay had assumed at the time, as we understand others had assumed as well, that the government of Quebec would provide a legislated power rate of approximately 4.5 cents per kilowatt hour. Our subsequent discussions with Hydro-Quebec over a number of months had indicated that the government was not at that time and not at the current time proposing to extend legislated power rates of that sort of range to new projects. As a consequence, in terms of the hydroelectric connection that would occur in 2025, the pre-feasibility study incorporates an estimate for power of 11.5 cents per kilowatt hour. And that 11.5 cents per kilowatt hour includes a capital component such that when the grid power connection takes place, Hydro-Quebec, from our discussions, has indicated that they would fund the capital portion of the transmission line on their balance sheet and amortize it back to the project over time. Our self-generated power, which would operate for that 10-year period at about 125 megawatts, has been undertaken on the basis of power generators supplied by MAN and a detailed calculation of the resulting fuel consumption and power costs to establish an operating cost per kilowatt hour of 15.6 cents. You've seen in the pre-feasibility press release the assumptions that we've taken in both for number six oil and for diesel fuel, and we've provided a sensitivity analysis anticipating that investors and analysts would then wish to understand how sensitive the fuel price was in respect of the net present value of the project. Resources have been upgraded to proven and probable reserves, and the total proven and probable reserves currently are at 1.36 billion tons and a resulting concentrate of 507 million tons. Reserves are calculated employing a 25% cutoff grade and pit optimization in accordance with industry standards. I might turn just for a moment now in summarizing sort of the quality and the detail that was applied to the pre-feasibility study. As Stephen indicated earlier, we front-ended the intensity with which we have undertaken these activities. So we've undertaken pilot plant test work early to deliver definitive results in terms of process flow sheet and how that process would function and the product that it would deliver. We can deliver the grades less than or equal to 4.5% silica and no other real deleterious elements, so that we can take that in hand to our subsequent phase of activities, which Stephen will identify as he summarizes at the end. In addition to that, our mine plan and schedule are solid. There's very little work to do when we go to feasibility in terms of mining. We have some geomechanical investigations to do to see whether we can optimize the pit slope angles above the 50 degrees that we've assumed for the pre-feasibility study. If we can, obviously, that would result in some additional material that could be moved into the proven and probable reserve category and would be available for exploitation. The feasibility will largely focus on providing some additional geotechnical information so that we can refine our estimates in terms of civil and infrastructure requirements. And our primary focus in terms of geotechnical data and further refinement of the port capital costs, as well as the incremental shipping costs associated with shipments to Rotterdam and transshipments to China. I believe that provides a reasonable summary of the salient points associated with our pre-feasibility study. I'd like to conclude again by reminding us that the fundamental attributes associated with the Hope's Advanced Bay project are an exceptional asset, a good resource, and a low operating cost, and that those attributes taking us forward will stand us in good stead in accordance with the future activities that Stephen will identify as he summarizes. Stephen?
Thanks, Alan. That's a good summary. Just looking ahead, our next step is that we'll continue on our fast track schedule, including the completion of a final feasibility study in around Q3 of 2013. We are already taken various steps, including some of the activities during the field season of the summer of 2012, to facilitate the commencement of the work in connection with the feasibility study, starting almost immediately. Similarly, our EIS is underway,
and we anticipate that that will be completed over the 2013-14 period with permitting in 2014. The other key component of our activity is to pursue strategic partnering, financing, and of course offtake partners, and that will be a large part of our focus over the next 12 months. With that, I would like to open the call to questions, and operator, if you wouldn't mind forwarding those questions to us, we will endeavor to deal with them as and when they are presented.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And if you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. And we do have a question from the line of Craig Miller. Please proceed with your question, Mr. Miller.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Craig.
Thanks for keeping to your schedule. I heard you mentioned transshipment to China and shipment to Rotterdam. Is that a function of ship size, and what does that transshipment assume?
That I'll let Alan explain or respond to that question in more detail. But Craig, the assumptions on shipment haven't really changed from the PEA and the AMEC report that was issued last year. The transshipment is an option that we would pursue for shipments to China during the winter months, and during the summer months, of course, the option is for us to ship directly using conventional ships. But
okay.
There's really no change in those assumptions and methodology. But Alan, you might want to
explain
some more.
The transshipment it allows you to move your product out of Ungava Bay with icebreakers in the winter. And the icebreakers typically are a higher cost shipment method. They burn more fuel as a consequence of having to be capable to break ice. So in the transshipment arrangement, the icebreaker then would haul a shorter distance, transfer the cargo, and it would go into market Capesize vessels and then conclude the voyage to China.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was something different or...
No, it's consistent. At feasibility, we will further refine, the exact location for transshipment and then have a look at any implications that location, updates in terms of shipping costs, etc., might have on the incremental cost of shipping from Ungava Bay versus Sept Îles.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And will your pit encroach on the lake?
Sorry?
I guess you're referring to the Carlton Mountain pit?
Yes.
Craig, final pit designs have now been completed, and we've provided for an appropriate buffer between the lake and the pit outer limit.
Yeah, the buffer is 100 meters.
Okay.
So the proven and probable reserves would reflect stopping at that boundary established in respect of the water body.
Okay, and then one final question. You must be getting pretty low on your cash balance. You got plans to resolve that, to keep the momentum going?
The good news, Craig, is that we have incurred a significant amount of our expenditures towards the PFS, and they're largely now behind us. As I mentioned earlier in the call, we have in fact started in the summer of just gone, some of the field work for the feasibility study, most of the ramp-up of the costs for the feasibility study won't be incurred until about the summer of 2013. So we plan to manage our cash position accordingly. One of the objectives, that, as we have said and discussed before, is that we would like to reach agreement with a strategic partner to assist in the provision of the financing of the feasibility study. I think the other factor that that is worth mentioning is that we are in the process, and we hope to be able to clarify over the next couple of months or so the more accurate cost of completing the feasibility study. But the indications are that they, because of the amount of work and the amount of engineering that we've managed to complete in this pre-feas, that those costs will be less than we were anticipating.
Okay, I think you answered it. Thanks a lot.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register your question, please press the 1-4 on your telephone now. Again, that'll be the 1 followed by the 4 for any questions or comments that you'd like to make. And we have no other questions. Please continue with your presentation or your closing remarks.
Thanks, Aubrey. Well, thanks for everyone who is on the line. Appreciate your time. Happy to deal with any other questions separately that may be arising. But certainly, we're very pleased to be able to report the outcome of this study. As Craig mentioned earlier, we're pleased to be able to deliver on time, as is the track record of our milestones is kept intact in terms of delivery date. To summarize, we think we have the low-cost iron project in the Labrador Trough of Canada, and the results of this study support that. We look forward to continuing our fast track, not just with the next round of study, but also with our timeline towards construction and commissioning. Thanks for dialing in, and we look forward to chatting and speaking with you in the future. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line at this time.